Welcome in. Time for KER Politics, thought-provoking views from leaders in the field. The views of our guests do not necessarily represent the views of either Corey or Big Al.
Now, time for KER Politics.
Hey, welcome in. Time for a daily editorial. We're a bit late because Jim and I were both very, very busy up until now. Going to talk about a couple of things today. We're going to talk about the fact that he does have control of the House now, and of course we're going to talk about the implications of that, and we're also going to talk about Donald Trump's speech last night. I thought it was a pretty good speech personally. Both Jimmy and I listened to it. The Republicans who are basically running the party in the House are Kevin McCarthy and Mitch McConnell. I'm not real happy about that, Jim. How about you?
No, I'm not. I think that Mitch McConnell in the Senate is leader in the Senate. He was just reelected today. And of course, Kevin McCarthy is nominated to be elected in January when the full new House takes its seat. Now, just to make sure it's clear that everyone understands, I did see some of the comments today thought that the Republicans actually wouldn't even take the House. But now they've got 219 seats, so they have the majority. Based on the decision desks, they're up. There's still about 10 seats left to call, but they do have confirmed majority right now, which is good. The problem is the leadership in both the House and the Senate remains the same in spite of this tremendous failure of this midterm election. I'm a little disappointed that McCarthy, you know, I kind of get because he kind of goes waffles either way and he does have a lot of influence. McConnell, he's been using, both of them actually used their PAC money, their big dark PAC money, to try and shape the outcomes in the House and the Senate to protect themselves. And so basically members in the House and the Senate, and the politics behind this is if you upset these guys, they're gonna be bitter and they're going to attack you. So I'm not sure that that type of threat is what's beneficial for the country. But of course, that's politics. And unfortunately, in my view, these guys, in spite of their failure, are now retaining power and powerful seats. McCarthy will have the most if he is. He's been nominated, approved by nomination. He will be voted on by the full House membership in January. If he does take that seat, then he'll be third in line to the presidency behind Biden and Kamala Harris.
Right.
So we'll see what happens. But again, that big PAC money following Citizens United that allowed this over the last 12 years really takes away the people's voices, and it takes away just the businesses and many people that in the past that were able to influence or at least get responses from these leaders. They don't really care about the people anymore. They care about that money in order to get reelected and to maintain power.
Jim, I'd like you to explain that through and through, if you would, please.
So the way this works, and you know, it's funny, I was talking to a guy today that's a very powerful, very influential business development guy that lobbies in D.C. And I mean, that's his job. He's a major lobbyist in D.C. and has a large organization that does it. And the way they do it, it used to be before Citizens United, they could get influence. They could go in and talk because of direct personal donations. But with the advent of these massive PACs and the PACs like the Senate reelection, you know, campaign money that is run by Mitch McConnell and the PAC that McCarthy runs that he gets influence on, those businesses and other lobbyists, you know, they actually have been iced out by mega donors, by people that that donate not $2,800, but by $100,000 or a million.
Yeah.
Or in some cases like this SBK, Sam Beekman Klein, $30 million or $37 million to the Democratic Party, the number two donor overall, the guy that FTX has just collapsed
with. Yeah.
So that's the way it works. Who are these people going to respond to in order to get elected? They're going to respond to the huge, massive donors, and they're going to, and in my view, Those massive donors are ones that want to continue towards globalization. They're not looking out for the best interests of people. They're looking out for their own bottom lines and their influence and power.
You know, I never thought that Mitch McConnell was much of a globalist. And Kevin McCarthy, I never thought he was either, but I guess I was wrong.
Well, I mean, Mitch McConnell is, you know, Elaine Chao, and they actually have business dealings with China. And, you know, both, you know, from mainland, from Taiwan, from Hong Kong. They've made a fortune off of that. But also, again, it's who donates the money to the PAC. So whether or not they're anti-globalist is irrelevant, because they want the money in order to get reelected, in order to maintain their power. And that money comes from corporations that are trying to influence them to keep borders open, to keep free flow of capital in order to enrich these corporations that are connected to the CCP.
Well, if they're that dependent on the PACs, it's pretty obvious how they're going to go on that one. Let's switch the subject a little bit and talk about something that's pretty black and white, and that's Donald Trump. Trump made, a pretty good speech last night from Mar-a-Lago. He is very, very convincing. The crowd was absolutely ecstatic, which you would expect. Everybody knew he was going to announce his candidacy. Sean Hannity cut into the Mar-a-Lago speech at the very end and said, you know, the one thing about this guy is there's nobody who can beat him in 2024. I don't personally agree with that. How about you, Jimmy?
I think it's going to be very difficult for anybody else to beat Donald Trump. And I think this goes back to 2015 when he went against the Republican Party, because they did not like him. He went against the media. He went against the Democratic Party. He went against, you know, long-term Republicans and, very influential people, donors and so forth, and managed to somehow get the people. He got the people involved, and then he was able to win.
Yeah, he definitely got the people involved.
Now, 75 million people voted for him, at least, in 2020. That's the most of any president in the past. It's the most of anybody, with the exception of Joe Biden's 81 million votes.
Yeah.
Which to me, continues to be a question how that is even possible without him campaigning. But, of course, this was in the COVID time. This was in mail-in ballots. This is when there was lack of ID. A lot of crazy things that have never been dug through. So... But Donald Trump basically built an army to win in 2016 and have built a bigger level of support. Because remember, he only got 62 million votes in 2016. He got 75 million, over 10 million more votes in 2020. Now, those people didn't go away. And they are a large number of them are incredibly loyal to him. And there's – even though people – I mean, Ron DeSantis – you know, great guy doing a wonderful job there in Florida. Glenn Youngkin in Virginia. They don't have that type of a base of support, which is why I think they're being very careful and not stepping out too much right now as Donald Trump made his announcement. So I think Sean Hannity's point is it's going to be very difficult to mobilize the type of support on the Republican Party side that Donald Trump can. Whether you like him or you don't, he has that core group. And for someone else to take that away, it's going to be tough. So, the big money players, the big PACs, the people that don't like Donald Trump on the right, and of course the Democrats and the media are going to try to attack him. They're going to try and separate him from other candidates. They're going to try to abuse him. But he's gone through this all before, Al.
Yeah, I know.
He's been attacked from the day he started. So I just don't see it as a simple process. Who knows how it's going to come out? He's going to be 78 years old if he does win the presidency again. He's 76 now. That's a challenge. He's offended many, many people over the years. But his speech last night was very focused on the future,
yeah.
Did not attack any of his other Republican opponents. and actually laid out some agenda items that I thought were pretty effective. I actually think his speech should have been about 10 or 15 minutes long. I think way too long. They meandered off on issues, but his points were valid. He was careful with it, and we'll see if his only hope of success for a national election, winning it, is to really hold back his ego and show a little magnanimity towards his opponents.
Well, the million-dollar question in my mind on that one is he able to do that?
I agree.
I really question that, Jim.
Well, we'll see. It was definitely a different tone last night, and you know, it's hard for someone to learn. You and I both know. You get to a certain age, it's just, hey, do I want to do that or not?
Right.
It has his methods were successful to a point. But when we get to 2020, you had a myriad of other challenges that I think were absolutely unprecedented in human history, with the Chinese virus, with the Wuhan virus, with COVID, the lockdowns, and then his massive attempts to try to fix it, but then actually being undermined by his own administration,
yeah,
by people within.
Sure.
Yeah. With the NIH, with Anthony Fauci, Deborah Birx, these people undermined the entire administration and the nation. And it's becoming clear that now the information from the vaccinations was wrong, in spite of the fact that he doesn't want to give up on the fact that how well he mobilized that effort, that it was actually a failed effort.
The thing that I'm a little disappointed with is that I thought he was a really bright guy, and a really bright guy could have figured out Fauci and could have figured out Mike Pence, and he could have beat him, I think. He had nothing but glorious compliments for, as he called him, Tony Fauci. I think he should have realized that he had an enemy and not a friend there, and he didn't do that.
Well, remember this, Al, and this is important to know the timeline. He had only mobilized the pharmaceutical industry in that last few months of his administration. The pharmaceutical industry actually had the vaccines ready to go before the election in November, but they would not announce it until after the election, which directly undermined Donald Trump. Now, if these people are all looking at you, and remember, Mike Pence was the task force leader for COVID.
Right.
If they're all looking at you and you think you trust them and they're being supportive and they are moving things in the direction that you want, how would you know any different? And then after the election, everything changed. And remember, the people that mandated the vaccines and that were forcing the vaccine was the Biden administration. It was not the Trump administration. So people have to remember that. And it's hard to separate those two out.
Yeah.
So,
Jimmy, where did you get the information about that the pharmaceutical companies had the vaccines ready before the election?
Oh, it was, well, they announced a week after the election. There were some indications before, but after they announced it, then it became clear that they had held that information back. And there was a lot of reporting on it at the time in 2020, in November of 2020.
Interesting. Well, we've covered Trump. We've covered the Democratic Party. Let's talk a little bit. Let's just do some guessing about the future of the Democratic Party. What do you think?
Well, if we're talking about
The Republican Party.
Yeah, if we're talking, I mean, both ways, it's pretty interesting. The Republican Party is going to have a challenge. This is going to be an internal fight. I think the reason why Trump, and this is, again, trying to be objective about it and looking at it from a political perspective, he immediately said something about DeSantis. It was blown up in the media as he was attacking him, but it's not so much that. And he said something about Youngkin. The reason why was to keep them from actually making any type of a statement, right?
Yeah.
He wanted to make it clear what he was going to do. So that was a bit of a strategy technique on his part.
Yeah.
And so he has the advantage. He has $100 million already in his campaign war chest. Remember, for the primaries in 2016, he only spent $35 million, and that was out of his own pocket to win the primaries then. So he's going to have a really big advantage financially. He's got the head start. He's got the experiences of the presidency. And now what he needs to do is put together – a very effective team that helps him stay on track and stay positive through this race. And then there'll be very few people that will be able to beat him. Mike Pence, I don't think will even have a hope. When you start looking at, DeSantis might do it, but he actually doesn't have the level of support, and he may alienate a large portion of the Republican Party. Now, he's going to be fighting against the Mitch McConnells and the Rhinos and the big funders, but he's been able to do that in the past.
Yeah.
And there's a very clear example of what you get without him in office with Joe Biden. So that's going to make, I think, give him a fairly strong advantage. And again, whether you like him or not, that's going to give him an exceptional advantage. What I think is going to happen within the party is eventually they'll do what they always do. There's going to be an ugly fight between now and then, but they will coalesce over whoever comes out as the primary lead.
Do you think they're going to go through all of the debates that they typically go through when they're looking for a candidate?
I don't know if anybody else is going to jump in.
Yeah.
With Trump, because he's almost running like an incumbent.
Yeah, he is.
There probably will be a few, but Chris Christie's not going to make it. He just doesn't have the support. Mike Pompeo, he's not going to get it. Tell me somebody, with the exception of DeSantis, possibly Youngkin, that has the profile and the support out there to actually go against him. And I actually don't think it would be wise on DeSantis's part to do it, because he's a young guy. He's got young children. His wife just went through cancer. He just got reelected. He's doing a phenomenal job in Florida. And in 2028, he would be the perfect presidential candidate.
Yeah, he would. There's no question about that. Well, you don't think he would be for 2024, huh?
I think it would be too ugly. And I think he's a smart tactician and probably understands that.
Yeah.
And he'll have to line a lot of ducks up to make sure that he could overcome Trump. But then it gets very ugly. And I think he's smarter than that. I do think, as I said before, that it would be a very good ticket if Ron DeSantis in 2024 became the vice presidential nominee with Trump. That would put him in line for, after one term, put him in line for the presidency in 2028.
Yeah.
And I think it would be a very good shoe-in for him. I also think that it would give the party strength, because they would support both, and they would know, even with Trump's age and his demeanor, Trump could come in and just lop off heads in Washington for a while, and then DeSantis would be able to pick up the pieces and look like the hero.
Yeah, well, I think you're right about that. Okay, Jim, thanks. It was an interesting night last night listening to Donald Trump, and it was a really interesting night to find out that the progression in the House did very definitely give the Republicans control. Thanks, Jim.
Yeah, you bet. Hey, Al, I do want to just end this on one point that, it's starting to come up in the blog. I just want to tell, the guys out there that we were paying attention to the FTX collapse on Friday night.
Oh, sure.
We actually did a piece on it, but it was a little bit, disjointed.
Yeah.
It's having a huge contagion effect for the crypto markets.
Yes,
I've said it before. It's eventually going to be regulated. That makes the value completely different, the value proposition for crypto. And right now, it may have a bigger impact on the financial markets. We're beginning to see that happen right now.
We are. It's interesting. It'll be interesting to me to see what happens to some of the really major players in the FTX/crypto market. We'll see what happens. Jim, back with you tomorrow. Thanks.
You bet.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You are listening to KER Politics.